Chapter 3. Find a mudlitter man than me, nor yet you won't find my equal in melancholy. Sing of filling the bumper fair, every drop you sprinkle, or the brow of care, smooths away a wrinkle? Yes. Perhaps so. But try filling yourself through the pores, underground, when you don't want to it. I am sorry to hear this, Joey. I had even thought that you might join a singing class in the house. Me, sir? No, no, young Master Wilding, you won't catch Joey Ladle muddling the harmony. A pecking machine, sir, is all that I am capable of proving myself, out of my cellars. But that you're welcome to, if you think it is worth your while, to keep such a thing on your premises. I do, Joey. Say no more, sir. The business's word is my law. And you're a-going to take young Master George Vendale partner into the old business? I am, Joey. More changes, you see. But don't change the name of the firm again. Don't do it, young Master Wilding. It was bad luck enough to make it yourself and company better by far have left it Peblis and nephew, that good luck always stuck to. You should never change luck when it's good, sir. At all events, I have no intention of changing the name of the house again, Joey. Glad to hear it, and wish you good day, young Master Wilding. But you had better by half, muttered Joey Ladle inaudibly, as he closed the door, and shook his head, have let the name alone from the first. You had better by half, have followed the luck instead of crossing it. Enter the housekeeper, the wine merchant sat in his dining room next morning, to receive the personal applicants for the vacant post in his establishment. It was an old-fashioned wainscoted room, the panels ornamented with festoons of flowers carved in wood, with an oaken floor, a well-worn Turkey carpet, and dark mahogany furniture, all of which had seen service and polish under Peblis and nephew. The great sideboard had assisted at many business dinners given by Peblis and nephew to their connection, on the principle of throwing sprats overboard to catch whales, and Peblis and nephew's comprehensive three-sided plate warmer, made to fit the whole front of the large fireplace, kept watch beneath it over a sarcophagus-shaped cellar that had in its time held many a dozen of Peblis and nephew's wine. But the little rubicund old bachelor with a pigtail, whose portrait was over the sideboard, and who could easily be identified as decidedly Peblison and decidedly not nephew, had retired into another sarcophagus, and the plate warmer had grown as cold as he. So, the golden and black griffins that supported the candelabra, with black balls in their mouths at the end of gilded chains, looked as if in their old age they had lost all heart for playing at ball, and were dolefully exhibiting their chains in the missionary line of inquiry, whether they had not earned emancipation by this time, and were not griffins and brothers. Such a Columbus of a morning was the summer morning that it discovered Cripple Corner. The light and warmth pierced in at the open windows, and irradiated the picture of a lady hanging over the chimney-piece, the only other decoration of the walls. My mother at 25, said Mr. Wilding to himself, as his eyes enthusiastically followed the light to the portrait's face. I hang up here, in order that visitors may admire my mother in the bloom of her youth and beauty. My mother at 50 I hang in the seclusion of my own chamber, as a remembrance sacred to me. Oh, it's you, Jarvis. These latter words he addressed to a clerk who had tapped at the door, and now looked in. Yes, sir. I merely wish to mention that it's gone 10, sir, and that there are several females in the counting house. Dear me, said the wine merchant, deepening in the pink of his complexion and whitening in the white, are there several? So many as several? I had better begin before there are more. I'll see them one by one, Jarvis, in the order of their arrival. Hastily entrenching himself in his easy chair at the table behind the grating stand, having first placed a chair on the other side of the table opposite his own seat, Mr. Wilding entered on his task with considerable trepidation. He ran the gauntlet that must be run on any such occasion. There were the usual species of profoundly unsympathetic women, and the usual species of much too sympathetic women. There were buccaneering widows who came to seize him, and who griped umbrellas under their arms, as if each umbrella were he, and each griper had got him. There were towering maiden ladies who had seen better days, and who came armed with clerical testimonials to their theology, as if he were Saint Peter with his keys. There were gentle maiden ladies who came to marry him. There were professional housekeepers, like non-commissioned officers, who put him through his domestic exercise, instead of submitting themselves to catechism. There were languid invalids, to whom salary was not so much an object as the comforts of a private hospital. There were sensitive creatures who burst into tears on being addressed, and had to be restored with glasses of cold water. There were some respondents who came two together, a highly promising one and a wholly unpromising one, of whom the promising one answered all questions charmingly, until it would at last appear that she was not a candidate at all, but only the friend of the unpromising one, who had glowered in absolute silence and apparent injury. At last, when the good wine merchant's simple heart was failing him, there entered an applicant quite different from all the rest. A woman, perhaps 50, but looking younger, with a face remarkable for placid cheerfulness, and a manner no less remarkable for its quiet expression of equability of temper. Nothing in her dress could have been changed to her advantage. Nothing in the noiseless self-possession of her manner could have been changed to her advantage. Nothing could have been in better unison with both than her voice when she answered the question, "What name shall I have the pleasure of noting down?" With the words, "My name is Sarah Goldstraw. Mrs. Goldstraw. My husband has been dead many years, and we had no family." Half a dozen questions had scarcely extracted as much to the purpose from anyone else. The voice dwelt so agreeably on Mr. Wilding's ear as he made his note, that he was rather long about it. When he looked up again, Mrs. Goldstraw's glance had naturally gone round the room, and now returned to him from the chimney-piece. Its expression was one of frank readiness to be questioned, and to answer straight. "You will excuse my asking you a few questions?" said the modest wine merchant. "Oh, surely, sir. Or I should have no business here. Have you filled the station of housekeeper before?" "Only once. I have lived with the same widow lady for 12 years, ever since I lost my husband. She was an invalid, and is lately dead, which is the occasion of my now wearing black." "I do not doubt that she has left you the best credentials," said Mr. Wilding. "I hope I may say, the very best. I thought it would save trouble, sir, if I wrote down the name and address of her representatives, and brought it with me," laying a card on the table. "You singularly remind me, Mrs. Goldstraw," said Wilding, taking the card beside him, "of a manner and tone of voice that I was once acquainted with. Not of an individual, I feel sure of that, though I cannot recall what it is I have in my mind, but of a general bearing. I ought to add, it was a kind and pleasant one." She smiled, as she rejoined, "At least, I am very glad of that, sir." "Yes," said the wine merchant, thoughtfully repeating his last phrase, with a momentary glance at his future housekeeper, "it was a kind and pleasant one. But that is the most I can make of it. Memory is sometimes like a half-forgotten dream. I don't know how it may appear to you, Mrs. Goldstraw, but so it appears to me." Probably it appeared to Mrs. Goldstraw in a similar light, for she quietly assented to the proposition. Mr. Wilding then offered to put himself at once in communication with the gentleman named upon the card, a firm of proctors in Doctors Commons. To this, Mrs. Goldstraw thankfully assented. Doctors Commons not being far off, Mr. Wilding suggested the feasibility of Mrs. Goldstraw's looking in again, say in 3 hours' time. Mrs. Goldstraw readily undertook to do so. In fine, the result of Mr. Wilding's inquiries being eminently satisfactory, Mrs. Goldstraw was that afternoon engaged on her own perfectly fair terms to come tomorrow and set up her rest as housekeeper in Cripple Corner. The housekeeper speaks. On the next day, Mrs. Goldstraw arrived to enter on her domestic duties. Having settled herself in her own room, without troubling the servants, and without wasting time, the new housekeeper announced herself as waiting to be favored with any instructions which her master might wish to give her. The wine merchant received Mrs. Goldstraw in the dining room, in which he had seen her on the previous day, and, the usual preliminary civilities having passed on either side, the two sat down to take counsel together on the affairs of the house. "About the meals, sir?" said Mrs. Goldstraw. "Have I a large, or a small, number to provide for?" "If I can carry out a certain old-fashioned plan of mine," replied Mr. Wilding, "you will have a large number to provide for. I am a lonely single man, Mrs. Goldstraw, and I hope to live with all the persons in my employment as if they were members of my family. Until that time comes, you will only have me, and the new partner whom I expect immediately, to provide for. What my partner's habits may be, I cannot yet say. But I may describe myself as a man of regular hours, with an invariable appetite that you may depend upon to announce." "About breakfast, sir?" asked Mrs. Goldstraw. "Is there anything particular?" She hesitated, and left the sentence unfinished. Her eyes turned slowly away from her master, and looked towards the chimney piece. If she had been a less excellent and experienced housekeeper, Mr. Wilding might have fancied that her attention was beginning to wander at the very outset of the interview. 8 o'clock is my breakfast hour," he resumed. "It is one of my virtues to be never tired of broiled bacon, and it is one of my vices to be habitually suspicious of the freshness of eggs." Mrs. Goldstraw looked back at him, still a little divided between her master's chimney piece and her master. "I take tea," Mr. Wilding went on, "and I am perhaps rather nervous and fidgety about drinking it within a certain time after it is made. If my tea stands too long," he hesitated on his side, and left the sentence unfinished. If he had not been engaged in discussing a subject of such paramount interest to himself as his breakfast, Mrs. Goldstraw might have fancied that his attention was beginning to wander at the very outset of the interview. "If your tea stands too long, sir," said the housekeeper, politely taking up her master's lost thread. "If my tea stands too long," repeated the wine merchant mechanically, his mind getting farther and farther away from his breakfast, and his eyes fixing themselves more and more inquiringly on his housekeeper's face. "If my tea, dear me, Mrs. Goldstraw, what is the manner and tone of voice that you remind me of? It strikes me even more strongly today than it did when I saw you yesterday. What can it be? What can it be?" repeated Mrs. Goldstraw. She said the words, evidently thinking while she spoke them of something else. The wine merchant, still looking at her inquiringly, observed that her eyes wandered towards the chimney piece once more. They fixed on the portrait of his mother, which hung there, and looked at it with that slight contraction of the brow which accompanies a scarcely conscious effort of memory. Mr. Wilding remarked, "My late dear mother, when she was 25. Mrs. Goldstraw thanked him with a movement of the head for being at the pains to explain the picture, and said, with a cleared brow, that it was the portrait of a very beautiful lady. Mr. Wilding, falling back into his former perplexity, tried once more to recover that lost recollection, associated so closely, and yet so undiscoverably, with his new housekeeper's voice and manner. "Excuse my asking you a question which has nothing to do with me or my breakfast," he said. "May I inquire if you have ever occupied any other situation than the situation of housekeeper?"
"Oh yes, sir.
I began life as one of the nurses at the Foundling."
"Why, that's it," cried the wine merchant, pushing back his chair.
"By heaven, their manner is the manner you remind me of." In an astonished look at him, Mrs. Goldstraw changed color, checked herself, turned her eyes upon the ground, and sat still and silent.
"What is the matter?" asked Mr. Wilding. Do I understand that you were in the Foundling, sir?
Certainly. I am not ashamed to own it.
Under the name you now bear?
Under the name of Walter Wilding.
And the lady Mrs. Goldstraw stopped short with a look at the portrait which was now unmistakably a look of alarm.
You mean my mother, interrupted Mr. Wilding.
Your mother, repeated the housekeeper, a little constrainedly, removed you from the Foundling?
At what age, sir?
At between 11 and 12 years old. It's quite a romantic adventure, Mrs. Goldstraw. He told the story of the lady having spoken to him while he sat at dinner with the other boys in the Foundling, and of all that had followed in his innocently communicative way. My poor mother could never have discovered me, he added, if she had not met with one of Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.